As anti-Semitism finds a new home on the political left amidst the ongoings in the Middle East conflict, can an unexpected alliance with the evangelical right help combat this alarming trend? Yeah, let's talk about that.
Instead of focusing on winning arguments, we're teaching the basic fundamentals of sales and marketing and how we can use them to win in the world of politics, teaching you how to meet people where they're at on the issues they care about. Welcome to The Brian Nichols Show.
Well, hey there, folks. Brian Nichols here on The Brian Nichols Show, and thank you for joining us on, of course, another fun-filled episode. I am, as always, your humble host, joining you from our lovely Cardio Miracle Studios here in Eastern Indiana. The Brian Nichols Show is brought to you and powered by Amp America. Yes, very excited to be part of the Amp America team. Go ahead, check out some awesome news articles, opinion pieces, and more over at ampamerica.com. And as for the Brian Nichols Show, and frankly, yours truly, we are powered here by our studio sponsor, Cardio Miracle. And folks, I am very excited to bring the message that is the Cardio Miracle difference, 1,000%. Real. Now, if you are suffering from high blood pressure or other heart ailments, Cardio Miracle may be the answer to your prayers. With the secret ingredient nitric oxide, not nitrous oxide, nitric oxide, it's going to help improve your heart health by lowering your blood pressure, helping you have a better night's sleep, for me, a better pump at the gym, and more. So, folks, I know this sounds probably too good to be true, and I frankly thought the exact same thing. So I went ahead, I ordered Cardio Miracle, and I realized, oh my goodness, I had nothing to worry about because there's a 100% money back guarantee. So not only do you get to experience the Cardio Miracle difference for yourself, no risk at all, but you can also save some cash along the way. Use code TBNS at checkout for 15% off your order, or simply click the link here in the show notes or video description that'll bring you over to cardiomiracle.com and join the tens of thousands of other folks out there who are experiencing the Cardio Miracle difference for themselves. I guarantee your heart will thank you. All right, folks, let's segue into today's episode. And unfortunately, it's a little bit more of a depressing topic, namely because of the ongoing happenings right now in our world, specifically going back to the genesis of this conversation, really October 6th, 2023. That's when we saw October 7th, my apologies, confusing with January 6th. October 7th, 2023, we saw the horrific attacks in Israel back with, I think it really, the starting off point was that concert that took place where I think it was 300 to 500 folks were killed or are still some missing. And it's turned into a whole conversation right now, taking over not just the Middle Eastern conflict and discourse, but now our American discourse. So how did we get here? To discuss how we got here and frankly, how the heck we get out of here, discussing not just that situation, but also his brand new book, The New American Anti-Semitism, The Left, The Right, and the Jews. Joining me today, Dr. Ben Ginsberg. Welcome to The Brian Nichols Show. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you, Brian?
Doing great. Ben, thank you for joining the show. And I wish we were talking about something more positive and uplifting. But frankly, Ben, this is a conversation we need to have. More and more folks, I'm seeing it in my world. I'm seeing it with the younger generations who are currently gracing the halls of high-level academia. The anti-Semitism, or at the very least, the misunderstanding of historical realities is like just running rampant through our higher education. But now I'm seeing a lot of this on the political left. So we really need to dig into this conversation, figure out how the heck we got here, and how do we actually fix things going forward. But Ben, before we do that, do us a favor, introduce yourself here to the Brian Nichols Show audience, and also why your focus on, yes, the left, the right, and the Jews.
Well, thank you, Brian. I'm a professor of political science at Johns Hopkins. Before that, I was a professor at Cornell for many years. And this topic of anti-Semitism is one in which I've been interested intellectually and also personally. My parents were both Holocaust survivors, and I personally was born in a displaced persons camp in Germany, came to the United States as a little kid. So this is something that has been very important to me and to my family in our history. The United States was always the great bastion of freedom. But in recent years, things have changed a bit in our country. And in particular, anti-Semitism, which used to be found on the political right, we equate it with Nazism, fascism and so forth, has migrated to the political left. So now we see a variety of progressive forces spouting what they call anti-Zionism, but in reality, there is no difference between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. Generally speaking, they're one and the same, even though I guess philosophically they could be different. You could be opposed to Israel and like Jews, but in the real world, it's not like that. People who are strongly opposed to Israel probably don't like Jews to begin with. And I'll tell you why. If you were to rank order the regimes in the world on the basis of their cruelty, on the basis of their evil, Israel wouldn't be at the top. In a world that contains Syria, Iran, North Korea, I mean, I personally am strongly opposed to North Korea. I want to lead a movement, but nobody seems to be too upset about the fact that the North Koreans murder and enslave their own people, or the, for that matter, the Iranians, the Syrians, and a host of others. So why Israel? And generally speaking, people who are strongly opposed to Israel harbor anti-Semitism to begin with. Secondly, if you're going to go out there screaming about Israel, chances are that your political opponents will include large numbers of Jews, who along with Christian Zionists and others are the defenders of Israel. So, you know, in political conflicts, you might start out as friends, but the people who you oppose eventually you come to dislike just by virtue of the political struggle. So whether or not anti-Zionism starts out as anti-Semitism, it becomes anti-Semitism very quickly. And we saw on college campuses that anti-Zionist student groups very quickly became anti-Jewish student groups. Now, of course, there is one odd group, and that's the anti-Zionist Jews, people who belong to groups like If Not Now, or others, Jewish Voice for Peace, that claim to be anti-Israel. Now, they're odd. Some of them are just weird. You know, some of them are what used to be called self-hating Jews. They want to say, oh, no, they don't mean me. I, too, am anti-Zionist. Others are leftists who, having observed that their friends on the left were all migrating to a position of anti-Semitism, didn't want to be left behind. They had to decide, am I going to be an anti-Zionist? Am I going to be a person of the left, or am I going to be a Jew? And they chose to be people of the left and joined what I would consider anti-Semitic groups. So that's today's anti-Semitism. But the question is, how did anti-Semitism, which used to be a right-wing idea, move over to the political left? And for that, Brian, we need a little history. The key event was the 1967 Israel-Arab War, which, as you know, lasted 7 or 8 days. And during that time, Israel routed all of the neighboring Arab states, Egypt, Syria, Jordan, Iraq. And this was a very critical event, not only in the Middle East, but also in the politics of anti-Semitism. Before 1967, Israel was a little socialist state that liberal and socialist politicians really liked. Bernie Sanders, for example, went to Israel and had himself photographed in front of a tractor, you know, showing that he was a man of the people. European socialists would go to Israel for similar reasons, demonstrating that they were sympathetic to the people. And Israel got most of its weapons from France and from the Eastern Bloc. In 67, Israel suddenly emerged as a military power, shocked everyone. And the United States government took stock of this because, you know, the United States, certainly in the 60s, even today, it sees the Middle East as a vitally important area because of oil. Saudi and Gulf oil are still the world's cheapest energy source. And they saw Israel as a potentially useful proxy in the Middle East. And the U.S. began arming Israel, and Israel shifted over into the American security orbit. Well, to politicians on the left, this was a great sin. This little socialist state now was a proxy for American imperialism, right? They couldn't forgive this sin. And then something else happened.
Attention, fans of The Office and political enthusiasts alike. Our friends over at Indie Emporium are ready to help you show your support for the most unexpected candidate of 2024, Michael Scott. Picture yourself wearing our We're Back in Business graphic tee featuring a bold red Michael Scott 2024 design that's sure to turn some heads. The soft, comfortable fabric and vibrant print make this a perfect choice for any campaign rally or debate watch party. And here's the best part. As part of our special campaign launch, you can use the discount code MS2024 to get 25% off your purchase. But you gotta act fast because this is part of our Michael Scott 2024 campaign launch, meaning it's gonna go fast. So you only have 2 weeks to get the exclusive 25% off your order. One more time, MS2024. Special shout out to our friends over at Indie Emporium. You can check them out at IndieEmporium.com.
In the 70s, 80s, 90s, large numbers of Muslims from Middle Eastern countries began migrating to Western Europe. Now, in Western Europe, socialist parties thought, well, wait a minute, this is pretty good because all of these oppressed people, they're going to be socialists, right? They're going to strengthen our voter base. But the problem was that these new socialist voters weren't interested in any of the traditional socialist ideas that were spouted by the European left. Not a single one of them had ever read Karl Marx. They weren't interested in any of these things. They were interested in Sharia and their religious ideas. So European socialists scratched their heads and came up with an idea. There might be one thing on which European socialists and these new Muslim immigrants could find common ground, and that was Israel, because both had developed or brought with them an intense dislike for Israel and for Jews. And this began the migration of anti-Semitism to the left. European socialists began to espouse anti-Zionist views, and a bit of anti-Semitism entered their rhetoric, and that's how it all started.
So, Ben, I do want to go back to one thing that you brought up.
Yeah.
And I think this would be really good just because there has been, I think, multiple situations of both sides. I don't want to do the both sides in terms of, the Israel-Hamas conflict, but rather when we're having this conversation about anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism, and you articulated in your perspective that anti-Zionism drifts into anti-Semitism. I guess let me ask the devil's advocate question, and that is, well, I know I'm a libertarian, and I know a lot of libertarians who are 1,000% pro-Jew, pro-Israel. However, they don't want American tax dollars going overseas. And that's not an Israel thing. That's just a foreign policy thing. They look at Ukraine and they say the exact same thing. Why are we sending $100 billion over to Ukraine?
This is a very good question. And I'm also a libertarian. The test for being a libertarian, do you hate the state? No, I would say yes.
That is a good test, by the way.
But the thing is that where I think libertarians need to think closely about their position is that America doesn't live in the world by itself. And America's place in the world is a function, in part, of the strength of our alliances, our ability to strengthen our friends. Ronald Reagan certainly understood this. Ronald Reagan was a libertarian to a point, but on the other hand, he believed that America should work to strengthen its allies. And that's how I feel. I mean, when it comes to Ukraine, sure, I don't like billions of dollars being sent out of the country. Though I will tell you that most of those billions of dollars are spent right here. Talk to executives at Lockheed Martin and they'll tell you. But protecting Ukraine is in our national interest. The Ukrainians are helping to defend us against a greater threat, namely Russia. And I think libertarians have to understand that. We're spending not on the Ukrainians, but on ourselves. The Ukrainians are fighting our fight. And the same is true of Israel.
And really quick, Ben, just to that, because I think there is a part that we should maybe dig in a little bit more to this. And that is, well, I think the libertarian, the non-interventionist libertarian argument would be, well, are we having to have this defense of American values in Ukraine? Are we having to have millions, billions of dollars go to Israel to defend Israel as a result of rewind 10, 15, 30, 50 years ago, where we were doing what we maybe were arguing as do good policies back in the day? Now we're starting to see the consequences of those policies where maybe they weren't as good as we had thought they were. And now we're having to almost, we're responding to our response more or less from yesterday.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The blowback is one of the key problems in international politics. We armed guerrilla forces in Afghanistan to defeat the Soviets, and that helped to mobilize them. And to this day, they're a problem for us. You can't accurately predict the future. Sometimes we make mistakes by intervening, and sometimes we make mistakes by not intervening. Look at Iran, for example. Because of the stupidity of the Carter administration, the Shah was overthrown, and an Islamist government took control of Iran. You know, that Islamist government is now our major adversary in the Middle East and probably about to test a nuclear weapon. Wouldn't we have been better off intervening in 1978? I think we would have, but who knew? So, you know, hindsight is always perfect, foresight not so. But I will say this, that libertarians need to look at the problem through the lens of what the Germans call Realpolitik. Did I get my R rolling properly? Realpolitik. that means political realism. We don't want to be naive on either end. We don't want to naively intervene when it's going to hurt us. We don't want to naively stand back when that's going to hurt us. We have to think through and do the best we can with the information at hand. I would say that in the case of the Ukraine, we did the right thing. That is, we provided huge quantities of weapons to the Ukrainians, and with those weapons, they were able to hold back the Russians and really bloody them. In the case of Israel and Hamas, our Arab allies in the Middle East are afraid of Hamas. Hamas is a proxy for the Iranians, and the Iranians use Hamas and Hezbollah to expand their influence in the Middle East. And this affects not only Israel, but our various Arab allies, Saudi Arabia, Jordan. So it is in our interest to see to, and Egypt, and it's in our interest to see to it that the Israelis defeat Hamas. You know, it's not forever, but at least for the time being, make it impossible for Hamas and Hezbollah to serve Iran's needs. Otherwise, the United States will pay for it in a few years. Remember, those people running around college campuses shouting about settler colonialism. Do you know this term, settler colonialism? They don't mean just Israel. They mean the United States of America.
Yes.
Okay? We were founded by settlers. Now, of course, the idea of settler colonialism is stupid because every square inch.
Sorry, that was fantastic. That is stupid. Yes, can't agree more.
Yeah, continue. It is. I mean, you know, stupid is stupid. Or as Mrs. Gump used to say, stupid is as stupid does.
Sure did.
Settler colonialism doesn't explain anything because it's true everywhere. Every square inch of territory on the face of the earth used to belong to somebody else and probably will again someday. You know, when the European colonists arrived on the shores of North America, they encountered Indian nations who had taken the land from previous Indian nations, and they had done so by force and settled the land. So, you know, their claim wasn't holy. It's the way of the world. So when these students and others go around screaming about settler colonialism, they don't mean just Israel. They have in mind the United States. Remember, they think of Israel as the little Satan and America as the great Satan. So this was the Iranian terminology. So they're, in their view, America and Israel are both the enemies. And America should understand that too. When we give weapons to Israel, Israel in some measure is fighting our fight as well. Hamas is a proxy for Iran, which is our enemy in the Middle East. That's how it is. That's realpolitik, as opposed to good feeling and kumbaya. We've got to avoid those kumbaya moments. They are very dangerous, right?
Well, so I think this is where the idealism of libertarians comes to the table, because we want a society where there's non-aggression. We want a society where it's, you know, you're within the confines of your own house, right? You're trying to focus on the things that matter to you in your world. But to your point, we are now in a situation of a global society where it's not just within the confines of our traditional borders. and I guess right. This is where we've had some challenges on more of the libertarian side of the aisle, because we want the ideal, while I think sometimes we completely bypass the reality. And I think you actually brought up a really good point, Ben, and that is when you're talking about right now looking at the college campuses and where this mentality has been fostered. And frankly, I think libertarians have an obligation to take a step back and say, who's agreeing with us fervently in this case, and are they doing it for the same reasons? And the answer is quite obviously no, right? They want the Israeli-Hamas conflict to end for completely different reasons than the non-interventionist, like, principled position from a libertarian, let's say, versus they're just much more in the emotional, vindictive mindset of whether it's destroy Israel or, to your point, where the anti-Zionism does become the anti-Semitism. And I think that right there speaks to, we've dropped the ball. You look back to the Harvard president, the UPenn president doing the testimony before Congress and being asked a very simple question: is calling for the genocide of Jews a violation of Jewish students' rights to feel comfortable or at least not threatened on campus? And none of the college presidents could give an effective or just a rational answer. And that spoke volumes.
You're talking now about the Three Stooges, right?
That's right. That's right. Yes. Well, with Claudine Gay leading the charge.
I'm glad you raised this, because campus anti-Semitism is something worth talking about. And of course, as a professor, I know a little more about this, even though at Johns Hopkins it's been muted. You know, campus anti-Semitism began with Muslim student groups like Students for Justice in Palestine, who organized chapters on a number of campuses where they joined other progressive groups, not libertarians, but they joined environmentalists, you know, the whole group, the panoply of woke groups. And these groups operate on a principle called intersectionality, which is a fancy term, but it means, you know, I'll support your cause and you'll support mine because we're all oppressed. So what's the difference of the exact cause? So gradually, the entire campus left became anti-Zionist. And this creates, you know, sort of weird coalition partners. I was shocked when I saw in some demonstration or other, a group calling themselves Queers for Palestine. Now, does this make any sense?
No, that does not make any sense, because if you were queers for Palestine in Palestine, they would not look at you with the same way that you're looking at the Palestinians in America.
Probably they would kill you.
Yeah, yeah, a little different.
And in the real world, queer Palestinians move to Israel where they're safe, or they don't come out of the closet in Palestine. Absolutely not. So the queers for Palestine are nuts, but it's intersectionality, right? They cooperate with their fellow leftists. And on college campuses, you have two other phenomena. One is that school administrators are terrified of the campus left.
Tell us more.
Because there is no campus right.
Yes.
You know, there's no right. And the great middle doesn't involve itself much in politics. So they're conditioned. Anything that is said on the left, oh, yes, yes, this is free speech. You notice that the Three Stooges could not bring themselves to say the first thing in response to, well, okay, if someone advocates genocide against the Jews, do you think that's bad? They wouldn't say it, because they'll never, never, ever criticize the left. The other problem on college campuses is that students don't know anything. They don't know any history, and it's not their fault. Nobody ever taught it to them. I've discovered that in every class I teach, whatever the subject is, I spend most of my time teaching history, because in our secondary schools, in our K to 12, they don't teach history. There used to be, I don't know about you, Brian, you might think back to your school experience. I'm a lot older. When I was a kid, they would start with facts, and a lot of facts before you ever moved on to ideas, right? Yep. This was something called Bloom's Pyramid, which was traditional pedagogy. The base is fact, and then you move up the steps. At the very apex is critical thinking. Well, a few years ago, progressive teachers said, that's not fair. We've got to invert the pyramid. We start with critical thinking. Now, I ask you this question. If you don't know any facts, what do you think critically about?
My buddy Chris just posted this. He says, when you don't know how things work, everything is conspiracy. That's it right there.
Everything. It's magical thinking. Everything is magical thinking.
Picture this. You wake up with a pounding headache and a sore throat, and you dread the thought of dragging yourself to the doctor's office, waiting for hours just to get a simple prescription. But what if I told you there's a better way? With The Wellness Company, you can see a board-certified doctor right from your phone or computer. No more waiting rooms. No more hassle. Just log in, describe your symptoms, and get the treatment you need. And as a listener of The Brian Nichols Show, you're going to get 10% off your visit if you use code TBNS. So don't let your busy schedule keep you from feeling your best. Visit The Wellness Company and use code TBNS to start your journey to a convenient, affordable healthcare.
You know, in our world today, we have a ton of magical thinking, conspiracy theories. Some guy goes to a pizza parlor in Washington to shoot it up because of something he heard. Well, you don't know anything. Anything is possible. I've discovered that college students, and this is, you know, the two colleges where I've taught, these are very selective. They take, I don't know, the top 5% of applicants. They don't know anything. They know World War I came before World War II because they're numbered. If they weren't numbered, they wouldn't be able to tell me that. You know, when we talked about the politics of the Middle East, I said, well, let's begin with World War I and the breakup of the Ottoman Empire. I think there was one kid out of 15 who claimed to know what the Ottoman Empire was, and I'm not sure he knew that much. So they don't know anything. And when kids don't know anything, as your friend said, they're capable of believing almost anything. And you know what? The crazier it is, the more likely they are to believe it. You know, on the internet, a really weird idea travels three times as fast as a regular idea because people are intrigued by it. We live in what some people call a post-truth society. And people believe things, and they believe them, so they must be true because they don't know anything. You know, I'm sure you saw this news clip where all the students chanting from the river to the sea were asked what river, what they didn't know.
They have no idea.
I had no idea. People would guess the, you know, the Caribbean Sea, the Amazon River. They had no idea. So you have, these are the three building blocks of campus craziness. One, you have Students for Justice in Palestine sort of worming its way into the progressive ecosystem. Then you have administrators who often are stupid and are only, you know, will never, never, ever criticize the left. And then you have students who are completely gullible, and it's not their fault. Nobody ever taught them anything.
Right.
You know, I've looked at some high school AP books to see what they say. I found one which is used in a lot of places that explained that the U.S. started World War II. Now, that's a little stretch, don't you think?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit. And the same book also said that American capitalism was more destructive of human life than Soviet or Chinese collectivization. Now, the book admitted that Mao killed 20 million people, but the book said a lot of this was a result of bad weather. Now, seriously, even Mao used to glorify, you know, used to revel in all these murders. Mao used to say that the quality of a revolutionary is to be measured by the number of people he killed. But according to this book, it was the weather. So this is what kids are taught. How are they supposed to know anything? So a lot of the problem really starts in our school system.
Hear, hear. Well, how about this, Ben? We're going towards the tail end of the episode here. And I do want to tee up one. I think it's a good long-term question because we need to have, I think, not just an understanding of the past, but frankly, where we're heading. So let's just take where we are today. Where do you see, both in terms of the pro and the con, of the conversation heading in terms of, you know, whether it's a more rational conversation about these very polarized issues? Do you see anything with regards to the American supporting of what's taking place in Ukraine and in Israel, just for the conversation we had today? Do you see maybe that those will lead to any unintended consequences we'll have to deal with 30 to 40 years from now today? And then I guess, where do you see our college institutions as they're kind of moving forward here after this post-truth society has really started to rear its ugly head? Do you see college institutions being a credible source of knowledge and insight as they were looked at years past as we head towards the future?
Well, you only ask simple questions.
Simple questions. Come on.
But I'll try to answer in part.
Cool.
You know, we're in a period of craziness in the United States. And, you know, we have a period of craziness every 30, 40 years or so. So I'm hopeful that adults will come forward and explain to all these kids how the world really works. I'm an idealist. I would love a world in which we could sit around the campfire singing Kumbaya. I know the words, too, you know, because I'm a product of the 60s. But that world has never existed, never in reality. And if we want a world in which we're safe, we have to be prepared to see the world as it really is. And as it really is, there are people out there who hate us. There are people out there who want what we have and would like to take it away from us. So when we have to support our friends, that's just how it is. It's fine to be a libertarian. I'm a libertarian, but I also know that we have to support our friends in the world. And sometimes we have to give them a kick in the pants to contribute their own support, which is, I think, what Trump did the other day. I don't think he is to be taken literally that he would encourage the Russians to invade Europe, but he meant that figuratively, that they need to wake up too and contribute properly to their own defense. Second, we have to seriously address our school system. And unfortunately, in a lot of school systems, the United States is presented, is framed as an imperialistic, exploitive, racist country. Now, sure, the United States has done all those things. We have been racist, have been exploitive, have been imperialist. No question. But that's not what the United States is about. The United States should be looked at through its positives, through liberty, prosperity, democracy, while admitting that we do have done bad things too, that we try to work on. So I would urge people who are interested to compare the state-mandated curricula in Texas and in California. A lot of the classes are the same. However, in California, everything is through a framework of racism, imperialism, exploitation, whereas in Texas, these things are admitted, but they're to be understood in terms of America's aspirations. And that's the way we should teach our kids. Why teach your kids that your country is no good, unless your goal, of course, is to destroy the country, which may be. I've responded to two of you. You asked me too many questions.
I know. Here's the final question I had, and that is, do you envision a situation where any of America's current policy positions as it pertains to the funding of, let's say, the wars in Ukraine, the wars currently in Israel against Gaza, do you see those painting a picture of any potential unintended consequences that they're not even on the purview here today, but fast forward 30, 40 years, we have to deal with those much as we are dealing with situations that are on the ground in those areas today that were caused by actions 30, 40, 50 years ago in the past?
Well, you know, I think it depends how we handle them. In the case of Ukraine, we can only hope that the Ukrainians' willingness to sacrifice and defend themselves will lead to a reaction in Russia similar to the reaction that occurred after the defeat in Afghanistan. Remember, the Soviet Union's collapse was in part a result of all the blood and treasure they lost in Afghanistan. And the blood and treasure lost by Russia here is much, much more significant. So we can only hope that the Russian people will react to this, to Putin's craziness. And in the Middle East, I think if we stay the course and allow the Israelis to destroy Hamas, despite the agony of the Palestinian people, that this will have a positive effect. Because remember, to our various friends in the Middle East, Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, the Gulf states, Hamas is an enormous threat because they are Iranian proxies. So I like to hope for the best. And I think that's what we should do. That's American, right? That's the real America. It's not settler colonialism. It's liberty and hoping for the best. So I think we have to behave reasonably and rationally now and pray that sometime in the future we can sit around the campfire singing Kumbaya, but not yet.
That will be the song of today's episode, Kumbaya. Ben, it's been a great conversation having you here on the show. The book is The New American Anti-Semitism, The Left, The Right, and The Jews. You can find it over at independent.org, over on Amazon, wherever you can find all your favorite books, all that fun stuff. Folks, if you got some value from today's episode, I'm going to ask you to please go ahead and give it a share. When you do, please tag yours truly at B Nichols Liberty on X as well as on Facebook.com. Ben, where can folks go ahead and reach out to you if they want to continue the conversation?
Sure. My email address is bginsbe1@gmail.com.
Beautiful. All right, folks. Well, listen, for the Brian Nichols Show, I know you're watching us or you're listening to us in some way, shape, or form, but yes, there are other ways that you can listen or watch to us. So for video of the show, YouTube, Rumble, X.com, and Facebook.com, you can check out the entire video versions of the show in their entirety over on those different entities. Please do me a favor, hit that subscribe button, hit the little notification bell, hit that like button, but also head down below into the comments. We want to hear your thoughts. I know there's a lot of libertarians who probably heard today's episode and they're screaming at their respective phones or earbuds or whatever it is they are listening to the show with today. So if you disagree, we want to hear your thoughts, but please keep it respectful. And of course, we want to have an intelligent conversation. That's what we do here. Educate, enlighten, and inform. As for the audio version of the show, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, wherever it is you get your podcast, just hit that download all unplayed episodes here of The Brian Nichols Show. We have over 825 episodes that I guarantee will leave you educated, enlightened, and informed. And one final plug, and that is to please support the folks who support us, and that is our phenomenal sponsors, Amp America, Cardio Miracle, brand new sponsor, The Wellness Company, plus our good friends over at Indie Emporium. They have a really cool shirt they're doing right now. Michael Scott from The Office. It's Michael Scott 2024, his 40-day plan. You want to go ahead and show folks that maybe Biden and Trump aren't necessarily are going to get your vote, and you want to vote for someone else. Show them you're voting for Michael Scott. Definitely raise a few questions there as well. So, folks, with that being said, that's all we have for you today. Brian Nichols signing off here on The Brian Nichols Show for Dr. Ben Ginsberg. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Nichols Show. Find more episodes at briannicholsshow.com.